Daughters of Nemesis, written by Anne Zarudi and read by Sean Barrett.
Chapter 1. All uniformed in worn black coats, all their lined and bitter faces bound in black headscarves, the old women gathered at the graveside. Under the broad-spreading branches of the oak which shaded the plot, the components of the grave's furniture had been dismantled. The headstone's front face leaned against the cemetery wall, hiding the inscription and the glassed-in photograph of the poet as a smiling young man. The candle lamps, which had not often been lit, and the flower vase, which had in the main held artificial flowers, lay discarded on a neighboring tomb. In the years following the burial, the once white marble curbstones had rarely been scrubbed and were discolored with algae and yellow lichens. The old women took in the stone's neglected state and cast their offended eyes up to the heavens. The bell of Reese's village church began to toll. In these northerly mountains there was no hope yet of spring, and the wind which flapped the men's trouser legs and stirred the evergreen branches was raw. The sky was an ashen veil cast over the day's end.
"There was a woman over in Lutro they buried too close to a tree,"
muttered one crone into the cold reddened ear of another, inclining her head towards the oak and to the bare and stony ground where the coffin had been laid 4 years before. On that occasion the earth, freshly dug and mounded up for the interment, was the lively brown of spring sowing. Now that same earth, settled and sunk, was cracked and pale.
"Its roots were poking through the poor soul's eyes. Bound by that tree she was until they cut her free. And this tree will have claimed him just the same."
The sexton leaned on his spade, impatient for his cue to break the ground, but the old women were still busy with their preparations, checking the necessities for the ritual. Holy basil for blessing, and red wine to wash the bones, white kerchiefs to wrap them, and a metal box to hold them in their final place of rest. A little apart, in fashionable black jackets and court shoes, two younger women stood, one of an age to be parent to the other. Ready to proceed at last, the old women hustled them closer to the graveside.
"Come forward, Kale, come forward," they insisted. "It's the faces of his close kin he'll want to see as he comes back to us."
The poet's sister and his daughter complied reluctantly, his sister encouraging her niece with an arm around her shoulder.
"Courage, Glikamu," said Frona. She hugged Leda close and placed a kiss of comfort on her temple. "Courage, and it'll soon be done."
Leda wiped her nose on a cotton handkerchief and turned her miserable face from her father's grave. Behind the eager old women, Artis Danas drew on a slender cigar and tried in vain to catch Frona's eye. The widow Katerina, whose deceased husband had once been mayor and still bestowed on her some status even years after his death, gave a signal to the sexton, who raised his spade and brought down the blade with all his strength to break the grave's hard earth. As he threw aside the first shovelful of stony soil, Katerina raised her voice in a lament, and the old women gathered around her began to wail. They moaned and shrieked to break all hearts, and the widow's tears ran freely as she sang of their grief at the poet's final sight of daylight and of their loss of him to the darkness once again. Though the weight of the earth would be removed at last from his chest, his time with them was gone, and soon he would be lost to them forever. The sexton dug down deeper into the grave, where he was hindered, as anticipated, by roots of oak. The old women nudged each other and made flamboyant crosses over their breasts. Frona put her hand up to her mouth and bit a knuckle. Leda looked towards the cemetery gates. Attis wandered away along the paths between the tombs, struggling against the wind to relight the stub of his cigar.